My guest in the studio tonight is an ARIA Award winning and APRA nominated artist, composer, producer, label owner and session bass player. That's electric bass and acoustic upright double
both
bass.
Both kinds of music.
He's got decades of national and international touring experience, from original projects such as the Java Quartet and Karma County to providing bass and the bass backing for artists such as Indigenous legend Jimmy Little. He's about to release the 8th album for his ensemble, the Java Quartet, which is well known to our audiences here on Now's the Time. They've been performing together for about 28 years. That's pretty scary. Dr. Michael Gagliazzi, welcome back to Now's the Time.
Oh, look, I'm absolutely humbled by that opener. My word, I've been embarrassment.
Well, Michael, it's been 12 years since we last chatted, since you were last in the hot seat here in the studio. It's hard to believe. At that time, you just released Rejuvenation, and in that time, obviously, you've completed your doctorate of music performance, I believe, at Monash University. Is that right?
Absolutely, with Adrian McNeil, the ethnomusicologist and sarode player of sorts. An amazing person.
And, of course, during that time, you also had a subsequent release for Java Together, which you released. And, of course, now you're about to release this brand new album, which I've got here in my hands, Before, Now, After. It's a brand new concept, in a way, for the album. Before we chat about this album, however, I wanted to, just for the listeners who might be new to you, may not have even heard of Java Quartet, can we revisit your story? Can you tell us, bring us up to speed with how you became invested in music and in particular the double bass?
Oh boy, that's a big tale, isn't it?
It is.
I've always loved the bass, ever since school. That's been the instrument for me. I cut my teeth on electric bass originally, with Greeks and Italian mates doing receptions, funk and disco in the late 80s and early 90s. I was actually talking to a wonderful player, Peter Panay. He used to hang out with Jackie Orzarski and those sort of guys back in the day with Arnie. It was really funk and groove and those kind of things, and bass obviously is the instrument, I think, in that genre anyway. It's actually a good friend of mine from that same group of friends, a guy like Sean Kennedy, a wonderful filmmaker, and he was behind the scenes of creating Costa Georgiadis, you know, and that, you know, the Gardening Australia, all that series. Go back a decade or so back to SBS and Costa's Gardening Odyssey.
Yeah.
And he's the producer, and we're all school buddies, like Sean got. Anyway, Sean, the guy who's the director of that series, one of the, he gave me Kind of Blue. And I suppose that sort of started that, and that's a classic segue from the funk and soul and R&B, moving more into that acoustic jazz, kind of modal jazz. And that's my bag, really, that modal jazz area. I was just thinking on the way over, I was listening to that wonderful album by, we were discussing it before, I can't pronounce her name correctly.
Zella Mogossian.
Yes, I had piano envy. I was just listening to those tunes and going, wow, I can't do it. Imagine people with that underneath their fingers, like Greg Coffin in this quartet. Mm. You know, they have this almost orchestral landscape because the depth of their concentration, that piano orchestra, I had completely piano envy. But anyway, getting back to my humble self, moving one Kind of Blue, and I thought there was an avenue where I could sort of move into improvised music that had that kind of groove, and I've just got a total popular music sensibility. And I found that was my kind of space where I could swing and groove, and it kind of, maybe I can't play changes, who knows. But yeah, that seemed to be my thing, and that's where I found my space. So the ensuing Java Quartet catalogue is me sort of, you know, mining that angle. But it's an art album, it's a meditation on time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, you look, I think it was about the early 2000s you became especially interested in Hindustani music. And I guess you discovered that there were a lot of shared similarities between sort of Coltrane's music, that hypnotic, and the dronal sounds of Hindustani music. And this is really what the essence of this album is in a lot of ways, isn't it?
You know what? It is a logical conclusion. It's the next stage in that kind of pathway, and that's a really succinct observation, because the with the modal stylings and the modal music, there are Coltrane was. Oh, it's a really difficult topic. It's really broad, but it's in the Western jazz sense. We slowed down the changes. So we did bass ostinato grooves and repetitive riffs, or only one or two chords. So we'd improvise over the one mode or scale. But really, when jazz guys get onto it, we superimpose all different scales and all different harmonies and all different tone, which is completely beautiful. When you look at modality in every other non-harmonic tradition, be it Indian or Iranian, Egyptian or Chinese music, when they think of mode, they really limit the melodic palette. So it's actually the melody and the way you play notes that really define what a mode is. And it's we play the changes.
Yes.
We play the changes, whereas in those non-harmonic modal traditions, they play the mode.
Yeah.
So they play a scale or a mode like they'd play changes. So they have certain melodic parameters and melodic rules that go way beyond what I could really understand. Or, these people of these cultural traditions devote their lives to that music just as we devote our lives to our Western contemporary music. So I could never portend to... I've got a fascination and a creative outlook, and I'm influenced by it, but I could never pretend to be a player. I can only be influenced by this particular album. It was really influenced by the melodic, just melodies that rule. So the whole album is written without chords, and it's all melodies. And basically, I was completely under the spell of Adrian McNeil and his Sarode playing, and we jam and play for hours, and this is part of a bit of scholarly research, but I was getting fragments of the way, and even a methodology of how to produce notes the same way a Sarode would produce notes. I'm not talking about playing raga or anything, because that's way out of my league, but just what can a bodgy Westerner take to, what can I take and bring back? And I think it has changed the sound of the bass on this album a little bit, and especially at the beginning of each of these tracks, I play solo, an introduction, but I play it against the piano. And yes. Greg was just so delicate in the way that he accompanied it and gave me space and tried to unpack the melodic content, which I actually formalized in the compositions. So I play all the little melodies and fragments that were the base for the forms, and all the forms are melodic sections. And of course, when Greg plays the piano, he takes the guide tones and the melody and a few of these melodic parameters that I've got for each piece, and then he just plays whatever he wants, which is magnificent. Probably actually he brings a real halt. Well, he almost brought it back into a little bit more of a Western context, because he coloured it like it. And same with Matt and Mike. So it's me and my little musings, but once I bring the work to the band, they just do what they do. And that's why it sounds good.
The Java Quartet. We're hearing the third piece from the album. They're all three lengthy pieces. The first one before, at 14 minutes. The second piece now at 16, and the final piece after at 18 minutes. Now, the length of these pieces, you mentioned to me some years ago that you were also heavily influenced by the music of the Necks, and it seems to me that this new album sort of manifests all these influences that you've been talking about, and it sort of defines the Java Quartet. You've always, I think, had a, and this probably comes from your pop music approach, a very, very simple approach. And it seems part of the broad appeal, the longevity of the Java Quartet, that broad appeal that it's had across the spectrum of jazz. Can you tell us a little bit about that, that approach, I guess, that you're that has found itself manifest in this particular album?
I'm just a simple guy. That's all I got. You know, that's yes, yes, and yes. I will never forget the next gigs at the old Darlington School in the late 80s and in the early 90s. That it was, because I'm not a bebop guy. I mean, I went to the Con, but I'm not a super jazz guy. Like, I love it and I admire it, and I'm almost intimidated by the world, this black American art form, which is in it. And sometimes I feel like it's not my art form. I mean, I'm not oppressed and I'm not, you know, through that time in America. But watching Chris Abrams and Tony Buck and of course, Lloyd, improvise and play like that, I think it gave me a space. Gave me a space being, you know, this young cat in Sydney, seeing improvised music that was had its own flavour and its own identity and its own sound, and that's never left me. And it had a groove. I mean, it's just, and for me, if it don't have a groove, it didn't ever speak at all, you know, coming from a rock and funk sort of background. And that was really a bridge to wanting to explore improvisational opportunity, but it had to be melodic.
Yeah,
I like, everyone loves a melody, and then look, that's that whole Louis Armstrong. You know, if you're not playing the melody, you're not playing jazz. And you know, it's really funny, that's that modal thing, that's the real essence of modality. It's the melody that defines the Gregorian chant. If you're singing, and that's how the church really controlled music, you know, you can only play these melodies and these songs and these modes in the church because they're the proper ones.
Yes.
And I think for me, it's just now I'm sort of understanding that synchronicity between, you know, the necks and modal jazz and Terry Riley and modal music outside of Western harmony. And I think that sort of comes to the fore this in this kind of work. It's a little bit of an epic triptych, but you're very right, very astute. It's like a summary piece. I don't think I'm going to end here, or you never know, but it's come full circle. And I suppose I was lucky. I've been doing part-time research forever, you know, for like 8 years or so, but I've been fortunate enough that I have a job and work, so my research was part-time, and I did it actually to improve my playing or make sense of what I was doing. How they call it, it's creative practice research. So it is a real end mark. And you know, Koyaanisqatsi was the other thing at the same time. So the next thing, you know, that sort of Philip Glass minimalism and the way that all interacts.